Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Gila Tech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Gutterworks. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, good morning, KMOXers. It is so nice to have beautiful springtime weather. St. Louis is upon us. I love this time of year. Golly. If you don't like the weather, it will change, I promise. Remember, just a few days ago, yesterday, had a little bit of rain coming up a little more in the forecast. But for this weekend, right now, right here, right in the middle of the United States, the center of the universe for you and me, it's beautiful weather today. So perhaps you've got a honey-do list, long list of things to do around the home. This is the Gila Tech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Gutterworks, and we are, I am, KMOX is, at your service. Phone lines wide open for your calls, and we've got a little bit more than an hour today before the Cardinals take center stage here on KMOX. Those numbers, of course, you know. Come on, we're all part of the KMOX family here. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Toll free anywhere in the universe, 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. Today's topic is indeed going to be whatever you want it to be. However, with the rain upon us, it's springtime, the great weather, it's about to be outdoor living time because the outdoors are getting so nice. Perhaps you've got something ahead of you, a plan for a patio. Maybe there's a, you know, barbecue, fire pit, grill, could be just outdoor fire area. Yeah, those cool evenings still happen, and gathering together around fire tends to be the history of the human race. We've done it to prepare our food. We do that in kitchens. Kitchens have become a social gathering, or at least we've realized that they have always been a social gathering around food. So no matter where I invite my guests, they all wind up in my kitchen. Yep, you know that as well. And so kitchens have evolved over time. Now we're moving outdoors with outdoor living spaces just because it's a wonderful time of the year, spring and fall, and we're still gathering around food. Well, those outdoor eating areas, outdoor kitchens, and then that kind of turns out to be a nice, comfortable place for evening gatherings, and the fire pit comes out. And, you know, sometimes that can be affected by the sun, the shade, or lack thereof. And so some covering from the sun in the afternoon because of the heat, and that extends the use of that outdoor living. We can talk about that and more, but I suspect we'll have some questions about water. Water is lifeblood for all of us. It is the good and the bad, because if we have enough of us, we survived. Enough water in us, we survive. If we have too much of that stuff, it floods, it won't leave our buildings, as it affects the building materials, the big pile of building materials we call our homes, our buildings, our offices, wherever we choose to live. Too much moisture in organic building materials, wood-based, even steel-based, anything, that moisture will just, it'll fall apart. So we can talk about that. 314-436-7900, 925-1120, 800-925-1120. As promised, I'm Scott Mosby. We've got a little more than an hour today, and so then the Cardinals come center stage. We've got great things happening. This is St. Louis. Cards on. We've got the Blues playing tonight. My gosh, so much happening around the area, as well as many of the activities in this time of the year in the middle of the U.S. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Now, one of the basic tenets as I got into the moisture is we all have a roof. So there's some sort of a covering that keeps the snow, the ice, the rain, all that, at least we hope it does. Now, those gutters are also at the edge of the roof. Those gutters are actually troughs on the edge of the roof that collect that water and then pipe it down through hopefully some sort of a downspout, and that downspout carries the water to the ground. Now, that's a lot of water. Keep in mind, there's a ton of water that comes, literally a ton of water that comes off of the roof. And if you just dump that water at the base of your foundation, then soon you'll be calling Helitech, you know, for help on dewatering, waterproofing, repairing. So my message, and that from Helitech as well, is pipe the water away from your house, at least a splash block. The recommended grade is at least a quarter of an inch drop per foot. So if you've got a 10-foot section, you need at least 10 times a quarter of a 2.5 inches of fall from your house, and that's the minimum. That's the minimum. So if it's flatter than that, and I'm talking about sidewalks, patios, decks, soil, gravel, doesn't matter what the gravel looks like, what is the slope of the soil underneath that gravel? Or the mulch? Mike Miller calls St. Louis the mulch capital of the world. We put mulch on everything. I particularly like mulch, but they do cover, you know, the mulch does cover a multitude of sins. So if the mulch looks like it's sloping away from the house, scratch back that mulch, and underneath, if you have water problems in the basement, 9 times out of 10, you've got soil sloping toward the foundation. So the water comes right through that mulch, right through that gravel, right through that deck, whatever it is, to the soil, drains either away or toward your foundation. Big deal. Pay attention to this. So my point, as well as from our sponsor, Helitech, make sure that water gets a swinging chance at getting away from the foundation so your foundation doesn't have to do yeoman's duty of dewatering. Because you know, if you get too much of that problem, you're calling Helitech. So anyway, Scott Mosby here. Topic today is outdoor living, windows, how we keep that window opening, because today, again, my message is open those windows. We don't often get fresh air through the house. If, like me, I open the windows in the morning, in the evening, try and get as much ventilation through, and depending upon the pollen, too. When I go outside and the pollen's thick, I just generally don't. I might open those windows early in the morning before the wind starts blowing. When the wind kicks up, time to close those windows. But I do leave in the Mosby household and recommend for you, keep your blower, your fan motor on the furnace, that you've got two settings. One says on, O-N, and the other says auto, A-U-T-O. Auto means automatic, comes on when the air conditioning or the furnace calls for heat or cooling. On means that fan runs all the time, and if you think about it, it just mixes up the air inside the house and eliminates some of the hot and cold spots, some of the humid, and so it moves the moisture around. If you're running a dehumidifier, fans are good to move that air around. We'll talk about this and more on the KMOX Home Improvement Show. Phone lines 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. My name is Scott Mosby. This is KMOX, and I am at your service.
The Blues are in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And where can you hear all the action and get the latest Blues news? On Y98FM, KMOX.com, and your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX. Let's go Blues! Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Gutterworks. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, your opportunity next weekend at Topgolf, 10:30 in the morning on Saturday, is a kitchen seminar. You can learn all about countertops, appliances, cabinets, floors, the difference in colors between the cabinets, the top, and the floor. What happens if they're all the same color? Spills, you know, all kinds of things. So colors, there are different ways and tools that designers can use color for safety and function. Any information you want on that, you can check it out at callmosby.com, the website callmosby.com. If you want to arrange golf, this golf is not included. You can make golf time with Top Golf after that. It's 10:30 next Saturday, April 27th, and that is at Top Golf in Chesterfield. callmosby.com for RSVPs. I had a request from a caller to repeat what I mentioned about the furnace blower, the fan. I run my fan all the time, every time. When I open my windows, I leave the fan motor blowing, and I run it on the setting. I go to my thermostat thing there on the wall inside your home, and it'll say heat or cool, and then it doesn't matter whether it's heat or cool or off. I still run my blower. It'll say fan, F-A-N. Sometimes it says blower, B-L-O-W-E-R, and I just set it to on, O-N. and let that thing run all the time. It costs about 50 cents, 75 cents a month. It's just not a big deal to run that blower motor, especially on the newer furnaces with very high efficiency blower motors on it. Well, the concept is to circulate the air in the house. Sometimes you might have a very humid basement. I run fans in the basement when I run into moist areas for clients at Mosby Building Arts, which is my day job. So we move the air around, try and circulate it, and get rid of the dead air, the corners. So anyway, I run those. And when I open the windows, like now, today, I leave that blower motor on as well. So we can talk about that and more. Phone lines open for you, 314-436-7900. Toll free, 800-925-1120. Right now, let's bring my friend up, Scott, and see what's cooking. Scott, good morning. Welcome. How can I help you, my friend?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You're on.
Oh, very good. Hey, Scott. Thank you for taking my call. I'm putting an antenna on my house to help pick up cell boost. I live way out in the country in Moscow Mills. The house has a newer, it's a newer house, so it has a chimney on the fireplace that's wrapped in vinyl siding. I want to mount to that, but what I'm curious of is what is underneath that vinyl siding when I go screw those lag bolts through. What could I hit? What do I need to do to make sure I'm sealing that, so on and so forth?
Most probably you will run into a half-inch sheet or, generally half-inch of OSB-oriented strand board, chipboard, might be plywood, but some sort of a wood base, likely no more than a half-inch thickness of that. If you happen to hit a 2x4, so much the better. Those could be on 16-inch centers, could be 24-inch centers. Generally, the way those chimneys are built is there is a metal flue that comes up, usually 12 inches in diameter on the outside, something like that, 10 or 12. And what is built around that, we call it a doghouse or a chimney, but it's really just a frame box that the vinyl siding then gets nailed to. So the best way to find this, and you can kind of knock on that vinyl siding. Have you ever, Scott, looked for 2x4s in the wall by knocking on the wall and listening to the sound?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know what you're talking about there. Try to find the stud.
Yeah, because when you get an antenna up there and then you get a lateral wind load, basically you're building a small sailboat in that antenna and you're sticking the mast way up in the air. The leverage over that, ideally the base of that antenna, the mounting bracket would be two brackets mounted as far apart as you can. So if you have a 12-inch spread and a 5-foot tall antenna, you've got a 5-to-1 leverage. So a 10-mile-an-hour wind effectively pushes a 50-mile-an-hour load on it. So if you get it 2 feet apart or 3 feet, so if you can get that bracket mounted up high enough that the snow near the roof, you miss the flashing, so you're not poking holes in that wall that the snow or the rain would bother with. My advice is find the studs. You'll be okay with that. If you're only finding the plywood, that's a little bit more of a difficult thing because you've only got a half inch thick wood to keep those lags from stripping out. You following me so far with this, Scott?
Absolutely. And then I guess you'd want to use lag bolts. What I'm wondering is, should I cut the vinyl siding and mount the antenna mount directly to it and use one of those? You can buy those vinyl things for mounting things, you know, that seal the siding. I'm thinking about doing that.
Well, or you can mount over it. My feeling is on a chimney like that, you're better off leaving the vinyl siding where it is and mounting a mounting block on it so that in a horizontal. Do you have lap siding on that so the siding is horizontal?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. My feeling is get as many fasteners as you can. So I would put maybe, you know, as pretty a looking 2x4 as I could right next to that vinyl. The box is not big enough that you're not going to have expansion and contraction problems with the siding trying to move. But I would mount a block high on that chimney, you know, down below the watershed and any kind of a cap, and then high enough at the bottom as well, spreading those out the best you can so that any mistake or over fastening, you know, drill the hole in the wrong place. So I would mount those 2x4s and if you can, paint them or color them the same as the siding so that they're the, you know, least noticeable. And then you can put 2 or 3 lag screws in. Basically, if you get a 2x4, I'd use 2.5 to 3 inch depth. You're 1.5 inches through the 2x4. You want to go another 2 inches in there, so you're 3.5 inches full length, maybe 3. But you want to get 2 inches of penetration into the plywood and 2x4 below that siding. So that's kind of my advice with you there. You following that so far?
Makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I've got another idea there. Instead of actually a wood 2x4, I'll go get a piece of Trex so it'll be even more weatherproof.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Trex, you can also use a PVC, kind of an AZEK thing. That's in a white. But that's great that you're on the right page because it's not really providing too much of the fastening. Now, keep in mind, if you use Trex or a PVC, then the lags, you can't fasten just to the Trex because those lags will strip out of there. I mean, that's recycled plastic kitchen bags. So you're not going to get a lot of mounting on that. Then you're now talking 4 to 5 inch lag bolts because you still have to mount that antenna base through the Trex into that 2x4 and plywood again. You following that thing?
Absolutely, yeah, because you don't want the wind load of the antenna to pull the mount out of the Trex. I'm with you.
Amen, brother. Absolutely. It's kind of like trust but verify. So basically put that block on there and then make sure your fasteners drill all the way through. I like to drill pilot holes. First, I'll drill a small pilot hole. I'll drive a nail in there to see that I've got solid, you know, wood behind there in a 2x4 that it's deep enough that I'm past the plywood. And then I'll drill pilot holes, you know, a little bit smaller than those threads. And then run that thing all the way in, and I like to have good resistance when I'm torquing that lag screw. You know, just like doing handrails on decks for us at Mosby. That's, you know, feedback counts.
Well, I appreciate your advice here, Scott. Actually, I'm picturing it all in my head now, and I'm glad I called because it's you've led me to think through a different way of doing this. You might have saved me some headache.
Well, no one mind is smarter than all of us. So, you know, together, I like your whole thing on the Trex or the AZEK, you know, something that doesn't take maintenance as your mounting block. So I think together we got to an even better place.
Yeah, I don't want to go up there anymore, and I have to. I'm not getting any younger.
Funny, you know, I meet a lot of people, and I've never met anybody who's getting younger.
Exactly.
All right.
Thank you so much, Scott.
All right. Have a good one. Good luck up there.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Scott Mosby here helping with mounting an antenna in Moscow Mills, a longer distance to pick up those signals, and as well as KMOX here. So lots of things happening. I have phone lines open for you. I'm waiting. So here patiently in the studio. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. Tomorrow is Easter. We have Passover upon us. So much is here. It's just a great time of the year and a very important time of the year in many of our lives. Again, phone lines 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. I welcome your calls. Bring them on. Bring them aboard. We're talking about that. And before we go, a little bit after noon to the St. Louis Cardinal baseball, and later on this evening, St. Louis Blues hockey. Go Blues, go Cards, right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Gutterworks. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, welcome back together, Home Improvement. We are live and lively. Go Blues, go Cards. Lots happening right in St. Louis here. Stay tuned for Cardinal Baseball right after this show. We've got a lot to talk about. Let's go to my friend and speak with Michael. Hey, Michael, good morning. Welcome to CamWex. How can I help, sir?
Scott, thanks for having me on your show. I'm going to be needing to replace my roof here soon, and I got a question on the vent cap. Those vent ridges on the top. Uh-huh. Some of the folks I've talked to recommend going to it. Others said not to. I've already got three or four of those other vent caps that are like on the pitch itself or close mm-hmm. to the pitch. What do you recommend as far as that those vent caps? I've heard that they may not last as long as you might like, or they're replacing them every 5 to 10 years. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, they don't last as long as a pan vent. So you're getting, okay. Basically, I'm agreeing with all that you're hearing. A roof is an enormous part of the house. So in my mind, it needs to be attractive because it's got to carry a lot of the charm of the home or the house, making it become my home. So I want a warm feeling when I show up at this place. A ridge vent, in my mind, is the least ugly, most attractive way. If you nail shingles up on it, if you put something on the ridge, it is the highest part of the roof, so it is the most efficient way to ventilate an attic. With that, when you use more attractive things, they generally cost you a little bit more, and they sometimes take more maintenance than just a simple pan vent. The only thing that can happen to that is, you know, the hail hammered into a dented place. So I agree with all of that. There's another caveat here, Michael. Very complex roofs, when you get into hips and you get into dormers and you get into a dormer that's halfway up the roof and it's an intake, the physics of how to ventilate an attic can become pretty complex. So some sections of dormers will not be vented or will be blocked from the venting. So, you know, when you really get into the science of this, it can get pretty complex. So some of the roofers, say, I don't want to use it, period, because they're not capable really of getting into the complexity of it. And then the other side is, or they are capable of being into the complexity of it, and they're smart enough to know not to do it. So beware. It's like buying a high-performance sports car. It'll do more than all the other vehicles together, but it's probably going to take a little more maintenance and cost to get there.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
You bet, Michael. Good luck, my friend. And trust your gut. This is your house. I can't make a decision of how pretty you want it, you know, versus the dollars it takes to get it there. So trust yourself, Michael. I you're a CamWex listener. You're pretty savvy. Let's see what's cooking with my other friend here and see what's happening and talk to Shirley. Hey, Shirley, good morning. Welcome to CamWex. How can I help you?
Morning, Scott. I have a problem with water in the basement.
Okay.
And it's a finished basement, but this particular room, it's not finished. It has a furnace and some shelving and so forth.
Okay.
Water comes in over the foundation.
Okay.
Now, outside, the side of that foundation, next to the foundation, there's about 12 to 15 feet of yews.
Okay.
And they've been there at least for 36 years.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm in the process. I know water. I have to arrange around my foundation so water slopes away from the house, and that's going to be done. My mm-hmm. question to you is, are there any precautions I need to take when removing these bushes? I mean, if they've been there that long, is it possible or they've affected the foundation? So,
yeah, unlikely on a structural basis on that. I don't think the yews have root systems powerful enough to mess with your foundation. Now, keep this in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mother Nature has compacted that soil, so now you have a pretty mature chunk of dirt on the outside of the house that's kind of like a roof. When you pull up the yews and you dig up the root balls, you fluff up that soil. You're effectively poking holes in the watershed dirt grade roof. So beware, you may increase water coming into your basement for time when you dig out anything, landscaping. For example, it's not uncommon for, you know, landscaping to go in, and they put all the soil amendments, loose, fluffy, loamy soil to make the roots, you know, germinate well and all that. It can contribute to more water in the basement. Now, water coming over the top of the foundation can be a flaw in the window flashing, the door flashing, and the siding itself. What is on the outside surface of your house? What's it made
of?
Stone?
Mm-hmm, gray stone.
Okay, gray stone. It takes about 20 to 40 seconds for water to penetrate stone and brick. So stone is not a waterproof product, and there is a flashing down on top of the foundation that water coming through the stone is supposed to come down to the brick ledge or the stone ledge and then be carried outside the house. You may have a wall problem that looks like a foundation leak. This is very much where Helitech works with Mosby Building Arts when they get in and coming over the top. It's either grading, which Helitech can help you with, or sometimes the tops of the windows around the stone, window sills where windows are. Windows wear out. Keep in mind that windows, wood, aluminum, steel, whatever it is, the corners are generally just caulked. Well, after 10, 15, 20 years, mm-hmm. those corner caulk joints fail. So the water hits the window then puts it down on the sill goes to the corner, leaks in behind the stone, you know, so you can have other issues in terms of how water comes over the top of the foundation, because anything from the wall, window, door, siding, second floor, behind the stone, behind the, whatever, comes down to the top of your foundation and runs into a concrete dam, and some of it flows out, some of it flows in. So beware, at least 50 to 60% of top of foundation water comes from the wall system itself, not necessarily a leaky foundation.
Thank you. I also forgot to mention that at one end, there is a leaf guard. I have leaf guard gutters, thanks to you.
Oh,
and there's a downspout there, and I have an extension. And I found there is a connection between that downspout to make sure that extension is really tight.
Yeah, and flowing freely, too. You have critters that during the winter move in there, and so you can have a plugged-up pipe. Everything can look just fine with a fabulous system, but if it's plugged up, you still have problems. So just verify the simple things, like water does indeed flow through the downspout and underground freely through that pipe as well.
The other end of the where the U's are located is also, well, it's a roof, where the two sides meet.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a valley.
Okay.
There's a valley, so I don't know if there's a connection there. I hadn't thought.
It can. Valleys are a concentration of water from two slopes. So, you mm-hmm. know, with water, it's very obedient. It only goes down, mm-hmm. and it'll go from wherever there's more of it to wherever it's less of it. So it tries to dry itself out. When you have a valley, that's a great place to start looking for trouble. Downspout, okay. Start looking for, you know, so all your instincts
right.
are, you know, just keep following your heart. You know, a little bit of concern and, you know, then you just go into that scientific method of trying to figure out, okay, is what I think happening or not?
Because we get a little overconfident about the leaf guard gutters, but they need to be checked too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, critters get in there, and, you
right.
know,
right.
I mean, and they can plug a gutter from the downside up, so it's not, you know, just keeping the
right.
leaves out of the top. You have critters coming in from the bottom.
What I'm planning to do is have someone do some landscaping so the water will slope away from the foundation.
Nice, nice.
And that's at least where I'm going to start. But I'll also take your other points into consideration. Otherwise, this business with the items that you mentioned about the wall and so forth, you need to get a contractor, or is it somebody like Helitech?
For that, on your wall leak, I would start with Helitech and ask them about it. Have you know recount the conversation we've had. You could also call Mosby Building Arts. We'll take a look at it as well. But once it's down below, if it's truly foundation, that's Helitech. Up in the wall above, that's the kind of stuff where you may be faced with replacing windows and doors to stop the leak. Where the flat, you know, you've got a hole in the wall. You know,
there's a huge picture window above these U's. So.
Boy, yeah, give Mosby a call. I'm thinking, because those U's will protect, and you take the U's out, now Mother Nature's blowing the rain against that window. Your leak could increase, not because you took the U's out, but because more water's hitting the window.
And so, that can be corrected once we take the U's out.
Yes, yes.
With the landscaping and
well,
silver.
or something else in terms of around that window. So, you know, beware. Once you start messing with it, doing the right thing can make matters worse for a short time while you're on the path to success.
So there, I don't need to be concerned about actually pulling the leaves out. I mean, it shouldn't be like tearing away its foundation or anything.
No, I think your problem is beyond that. I think the ewes may actually be protecting things as ugly or overgrown as they've become. So,
okay.
Beware. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time and your advice.
All right, Shirley. Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Home improvement, Scott Mosby. So many things we're talking about. Roofing, ridge venting, ventilating. By the way, ventilating an attic is just as important in the summer heat. That makes sense. But in the winter, the goal of proper attic ventilation is to cool off the air in the attic. Cool off. Not hold the heat. Cool it off enough that snow remains snow and doesn't turn into water and then ice dam in ice form. So keep in mind, attic ventilation is keeping the outside as the outside. So right here on KMOX, Scott Mosby at your service, back for more after this.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Gutterworks. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, in the nature of time, let's get going and talk with my friend Pat. Hey, Pat, good morning. How can I help, friend?
Hi, this is a question that follows right along with the roof venting. I, too, have to replace my roof real soon, and currently, what I have is a soffit vent on both sides of the house and gable vents.
Okay.
And it's a straight line kind of roof. There's no turns in it, no hips, no valleys, nothing. What I've heard in the past is that you can have too much venting in a roof and you can have too little. I believe now I have too little with only gable vents and soffit vent. Where do you get to the place where you have too much and how do you accidentally do that?
Well, on your roof, it's pretty simple. The issue is the hot air escapes out the top, and the cool air will always come in on the bottom unless you have high winds, you know, changing that around. Too much venting, I think you're suggesting, if you were to take your gable end vents, your soffit vents, the house as it is right now, and then just add ridge vent, that's the wrong thing. Because what will happen is your existing two gable ends, the vents that you have now where the air goes out, those will no longer be the top of the roof, the apex, the very highest edge of that triangle of your roof. They will become intake, and your new ridge vent, which is not yet installed, becomes the exhaust, and all of your soffits are negated. They basically are orphaned, of no use. Very little airflow comes through there. So in that scenario, when you add a ridge vent, you know, kind of like what you're saying, too much ventilation, you then have to block off those two gable end vents to force the inhale, the intake, the source air to come in low at those soffits and then rise and carry out the moisture and the heat and escape out the new ridge vent. So I think that's what you're suggesting there. But that in your roof, that is the one wrong thing that can happen. If you add a ridge vent, you've got to force intake down low by covering up the soffits or by covering up your gable end vents.
Okay, so is there any other venting that I should even consider before I have this roof put on? Or just leave it as it stands? And the reason I'm asking that is I've been in the roof, in the ceiling before to do a wiring project. And in the month of May, it was unbelievably hot in that attic space. So that made me believe I'm not getting this vented enough.
And that's because you have two ends. You've got regular soffits, which is generally across the front and back of the house. And then you've got these gable, you don't have enough ventilation. It should be the closer to the outside ambient temperature, the better your attic is ventilated. On the average, attics are about 20 to 30 degrees warmer than outdoors. So it is hot, but if it's that hot in May, yes, you are undervented. And the issue is the ridge vent is all the way across the roof as opposed to just at the two ends.
So is there a remedy for what I have without basically negating something that's already in place?
You can leave it as it is, but it's not as good as having ventilation full length on a ridge vent, and then you do have to must cover those two gable end vents to put a ridge vent on, or pan vents, anything that's consistently all the way across the roof. I'm about out of time here. I apologize on that, Pat, but I wanted to take time and tell you there. Stay tuned. We got a few more minutes on KMOX After News, Weather, and Sports right here.
Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Gutterworks. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, Scott Mosby here. We've got a few more minutes before going up to the Cardinal pregame show, so stay tuned here. Lots happening. Let's go right to the phone lines and speak with my friend Walt. Walt, good afternoon. Welcome to lunch on KMOX. How can I help?
Good morning, Scott. The question is, with older air conditioning units where people are having their spring tune-ups coming up, and like air conditioning units that are probably 10 to 15 years old, if a customer like me comes to find out that they had a Freon leak over the winter and it's going to take like 5 or 6 pounds of Freon just to reload it, and they're going to quit making Freon next year, so some of these older air conditioning units are going to be obsolete if they have Freon leaks next year.
Yes.
We're sort of caught in a catch-22. Do we patch it today and then risk then to put a new system in a year or two? That's what I think a lot of homeowners are going to be surprised when they fire up their air conditioner. You know, KMOX is going to be 84 on Monday. I'm sure the air conditionings will be starting to be turned on real soon.
Yeah. Well, the issue for me, Walt, is, do I put a new engine in a 15-year-old car and then call it a new car, or is it time to replace and upgrade? There's so many improvements in energy efficiency, comfort, fan speeds, multi-stage speed. You know, there's so many goodies that have happened in technology, not only in, the internet and such, but the heating and cooling, the control that, the miles per gallon or SEER, energy efficiency rating, that only comes by buying a new unit. So, paying $1 zillion per pound of Freon, just gets you from one trouble to the next. So my heart is, when you get 10 to 15 years, you're pretty close to the end of the life of that unit. So my advice, I'm going to come down on, it's time, because in the next 5 years, you're going to replace this thing anyway. How much money do you want to put onto that, or get your return on investment with a better SEER or efficiency rating? So that's kind of where I fall on it, Walt.
All right, Scott. Thank you for your service.
You bet, sir. Take care. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby right here. We've got a few IOUs. Let's see what's next up. Let's go to my friend Laura. Hey, Laura, thank you for waiting, and welcome to KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. My question is about colored ceramic tile on bathroom walls, including in the shower stall.
Uh-huh.
Other than ripping it out, is there any way to camouflage when you have a really ugly color?
You mean like around replacing the faucet or down at the bottom around showers, something like that, Laura?
No, I'm talking about like the ceramic tile that's on a bathroom wall. You know, it goes up like three-quarter part of the wall, and it's also covering the entire, covering the walls of a tub shower enclosure.
Sure. Now, you can go over those with solid surface materials, like you can go over it with a granite. You can go over it with kind of a swanstone type product. You can go over it with, all kinds of sheets of things. So because it's a pretty moisture-resistant surface, it's like hanging paneling. So there are bath remodelers that will put a product over that tile, some of which are plastic and some of which are, polyester and things like that. So there are other ways other than just sticking with that tile.
Okay, so you really have to get a bathroom remodeler to put something over it. You can't paint it or put on some kind of, like they have those glass pieces they put over backsplashes and kitchens now. You can't put anything like that over it?
Yes, you can, and no, you shouldn't. If you've got a, if you have a guest shower, you can actually reglaze, or which is an epoxy paint. And if it gets used maybe 6-8 times a year, that could be a good thing because it doesn't stay wet all the time. If you have a shower that gets used once a day or twice a day every day, you need a more permanent material that's solid to take that weather and that wear from those, the constant humidity, in my mind, Laura. So you kind of get what you pay for. You know, if you take the easy route and you're not using it much, you're okay. But if it's a yeoman's bathroom that gets used every day, boy, do something more permanent.
Right. That's what I was. I thought. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Scott. Happy Easter.
Thank you. You too. Take care, Laura.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Hey, I want to remind you about Gershman Mortgage. Gershman Mortgage has been around for over 60 years right here in St. Louis. You know the name, Gershman. Yeah, they've been around for multiple generations. Now they've got 9 St. Louis metro area offices to serve you. Do you know anything about a reverse mortgage other than, oh, I've heard so many? A reverse mortgage is nothing more than putting money into an investment, the structure of your home. That's a normal mortgage. It builds up equity. A reverse mortgage just draws on that equity. So think of it kind of as a savings account. The equity comes back out in loan form. So a reverse mortgage is actually created by the U.S. government, and you have to have a certified mortgage professional to do this because it's a big deal, and getting it right really matters. Call Gershman, 314-236-0163 for more interest and information. Gershman Mortgage, NMLS, 138063, 16253 Swingley Ridge Road, Suite 400, Chesterfield, Missouri, 63017. Equal housing lender. Stay tuned. Cardinal baseball coming up next.